You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. Thrilled, as always, to have you listening in, whether this is your first time checking out Locked On Seahawks or you're a regular listener. We're officially less than 2 weeks away from the start of training camp, so our podcast will be entering regular season mode from here on out, back to 5 podcasts per week. The only daily Seahawks podcast on the market. On today's episode, it's the official return of Mailbag Monday. I'll be tackling your questions. I'll also continue our training camp preview with the running back position. Winning your league starts with the right data. Vinny Iyer of the Sporting News provides you the edge you need in your fantasy football leagues. Locked On Fantasy Football is a daily podcast all year round, so your fantasy team never fails. Make sure to subscribe to the Locked On Fantasy Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Former Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman won't be charged with a felony for burglary domestic violence after attempting to break into his in-laws' residence last Wednesday, and he was released from jail without bail on Friday. However, he still could be charged with up to 5 misdemeanors. The veteran defender released a statement on social media on Thursday saying he was remorseful for his actions and pled not guilty to 5 misdemeanor charges. Among those, criminal trespass in the second degree and malicious mischief in the third degree. Both of those are carrying domestic violence designations, along with charges of resisting arrest, driving under the influence, and reckless endangerment of roadway workers. This whole situation is unfortunate, and it proves once again, these athletes we revere are human. And I said this when the news first came out last Wednesday, I was not going to jump to any conclusions or speculate about things with a situation this serious until we actually had concrete information. At the time of our recording last Wednesday, we really didn't know anything other than Sherman had been booked at the King County Correctional Facility. No other details had been revealed at that point. Just kind of recapping how things went down, a 911 call from Ashley Sherman became public on Wednesday. Cairo ended up putting that on the air. I'm not sure who made that decision. I found that to be quite questionable. Seemed like it's a pretty personal matter to be airing live on the radio, but those 911 calls are public records. They were able to get a hold of it. And listening to the call, she told the dispatcher Richard Sherman had been drinking heavily, he'd become aggressive, and was threatening to kill himself. So this is a very difficult time for the family. He then drove away. Redmond police were immediately made aware of the situation. And as he made his way up towards Redmond, he crashed his SUV into a cement barrier in a construction zone on Highway 520. And luckily, did not strike any of the workers that were out there. That was one of the big things, one of my big takeaways, listening to the police chief as well as one of the state officers that was speaking with the media. This could have been much, much worse because there were actually workers that were out there. This is after midnight. This is when they're able to get work done on a busy highway like 520. There were workers out there, and one of them was the one that happened to call 911, suspecting that Sherman was under the influence. And after he crashed his SUV into the barrier, he drove off for about a half a mile. The vehicle could no longer run at that point. Really bad damage on the driver's side of the SUV. He abandoned it and ended up trekking his way over to his in-law's home. And this is just a little before 2 a.m. in the morning. Another video came out showing how this played out, but Sherman ended up going up to the front door of his in-laws, and he was trying to barge through the door, was ramming his shoulder in. His father-in-law ended up spraying him with pepper spray. He had a gun on him out of fear that Richard was going to hurt his family. And so it was just a really ugly situation, an unfortunate one. Ended up ultimately that the judge decided because Richard Sherman is viewed so favorably in the community, he hasn't been in trouble with the law. This is his first time being arrested. Looking at the evidence that they had, he decided that a felony for burglary domestic violence didn't fit the bill. and they decided to allow him to go without bail. But these other misdemeanors, even though he pled guilty with the evidence that's out there, the video evidence of him going up to his in-laws' home, the fact that he did crash his vehicle and then he fled the vehicle after he parked it off to the side and then ended up finding his way over to the house. There are a number of repercussions that could be coming from this. I'm expecting it's going to be something along the lines of community service. I don't think he's going to be serving any time for the punishments that he's going to get from these misdemeanors. But I would expect there's going to be some sort of a punishment stemming from this. And obviously, Sherman's embarrassed by the entire situation. He has been dealing with a lot of difficult times as of late. It sounds like in February that there was some type of a protective order that was put in place between him and the in-laws. And so this is something that has been stemming for a while. Hopefully, he's going to be able to get the help that he needs right now. Everybody's talking football. I'm not going to talk football right now because to me, that should be the absolute last priority. Richard Sherman he's been such a pinnacle in this community since the Seahawks drafted him way back in 2011. We're talking about a very smart, very kind man that had never done anything like this before. And so he's dealing with some things that I can't even imagine. All of us have our share of issues that we have to deal with. And so my hope is that he's going to be able to get the help that he needs so that he can move forward. His family can stay safe. He can stay safe. And once he's reached a point where he feels like things are improving, then maybe we can start looking at when Richard Sherman returns to a football field. And, you know, maybe he'll end up signing with somebody in the near future after all this plays out. But I just think football's got to be the last focus right now. He's got to get his life together. He's got to get his relationships back on track. His family's got to be safe. He's got to be safe. So I'm hoping right now that that's ultimately what is going to come of this. And hopefully this will be a learning moment for him, and we're not going to see anything else like this. It's a scary situation to cover, and obviously a player that I have great respect for. My time working on the Seahawks beat, having spoken with him several times, seeing the things that he has done in this community, I'm pulling for him. I'm pulling for his family, and hopefully there's going to be good things coming here in the future, and he can get away from this dark time in his life. When I return in the second quarter, I'm going to tackle your questions in our Monday mailbag segment. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 amazing flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of the best ones, caramel brownie, cookies and cream, apple almond crisp, peanut butter, double chocolate. You're going to have a tough time eating just one. These bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft, easy to chew. It's great for the health conscious guy. Lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and they're great for a keto diet. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. Back in regular season mode, 5 episodes a week, as we've done the last couple of years. The mailbag is always going to be on the Monday coming off of games. So we're going to start that process now with our Monday mailbag, going back to our regular season programming, tackling your questions each and every Monday. First one coming here from Brennan. He tweets, "I am surprised that nobody is interested in Earl Thomas, even with his issues. If many players like Antonio Brown can get back into the league with heavy interest, then why isn't Thomas thought of more?" I think there's a couple things to consider here. Earl Thomas is now, I mean, he's about the same age as Antonio Brown is. And so maybe age isn't as big of an issue, but when you're talking about the safety position and a player that's game was predicated so much on his ability to fly around the field, I've got to wonder if teams were looking at him as a player, well, his best days are behind him, and with the baggage that he's carrying, we can't justify bringing him in. And I think some teams might be looking to the two teams that let him go, the Seattle Seahawks and the Baltimore Ravens. If you don't work out with those two teams and you're a talented player, then most teams are going to be scared away, because the Seahawks have usually been able to find ways to work with unique personalities. The Baltimore Ravens have had a lot of success doing that. John Harbaugh runs a really good ship there in Baltimore, a team that consistently is in the hunt for championships. And so if Baltimore's own players did not want him there, then that is a big red flag, especially considering the Seahawks, a perennial all-pro safety, they decided, you know what, we're not going to give you a third contract. And obviously the injury issues in the past played a role in that in Seattle. And it's unfortunate the way that things finished up there with him giving Pete Carroll the bird, coming off the field in the cart in Arizona. And just, you know, it's the worst possible outcome from a player for a player of that stature. That's one of the best players in franchise history. I just think that the fact that he's getting to be an older player, the fact that two well-respected franchises cut ties with him in less than a year and a half span, and the fact that the legal issues he was dealing with weren't necessarily, you know, robbing a candy store. I mean, he got in big trouble for gun possession. You know, he was cheating on his wife. There was all kinds of things that were going on there. And so I just think that he's had enough baggage, his age, the fact that he's had some injuries. When you add all those things together, that's probably why nobody is showing interest. The Houston Texans briefly were taking a look at him last year, and they ended up canceling the workout with him. So since that point, I haven't heard any teams being linked to him. So at this point, I don't know if we'll see Earl Thomas on the field again. His career could very well be finished. And I think there are a number of issues at play here beyond simply the off-field stuff that he's been dealing with. Jeremy tweets, favorite TV show to binge watch and your favorite character in that show. I'm going to be honest, Jeremy, I don't watch a ton of TV. I like to watch sporting events and I like to watch movies, but I don't watch a lot of TV shows. Breaking Bad is one that I got addicted to, and I ended up watching the entire series. I watched some of Dexter. As far as shows that I binge watch, really the only one that I consistently watch is South Park. I'm a huge South Park fan. I think that they are brilliant. I think they're hilarious. And I love the fact they pick on both sides of the aisle. They don't hold back on anybody, whether you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, whether you believe the earth's flat, it's round, whatever. They're going to pick on anybody and everybody. And so that is probably the show that I've watched the most in my life. I've seen every single episode at least once. There are a number of episodes I've seen 3, 4, 5, maybe more times. It's my favorite TV show. As far as characters in that show, there's a few of them that I really like, but how can you not pick Randy Marsh as the best character? Every episode where he's the lead character is epic. It's legendary. And I just love the character. And quite frankly, it reminds me of one of my friend's dads. And so that makes it even funnier to me. But South Park, and I would say Randy's probably my favorite character on that show, though Butters would be a very close second. He's another one that seems like every show that he's got a prominent role is one of the better episodes that they've come out with. Third question here from Chase Rydell tweets, does Cody Barton have any chance at beating out Daryl Taylor at the Sam linebacker spot? So I've seen a few other reporters mention this. And the only reason that I think, you know, maybe there's a sliver of hope for him to be the starter at that position, he did start 4 games there as a rookie. He has a little bit more experience than what Daryl Taylor does. But I think in the end, Seattle wants to have a pass rushing presence there. And I just don't think you are going to get that from Cody Barton. I think he's a very solid reserve off-ball linebacker. I didn't think he handled the run very well playing that position, especially containing the edge, and that is critical at that position. I don't know if Daryl Taylor can be that guy, especially given the fact that he looked a little bit light to me during OTAs and minicamp. I'd like to see him get back in that 255, 260 range weight-wise, but that is really the type of player the Seahawks are looking for at that position. They want a Bruce Irvin-style player that has pass rushing ability, can drop back in coverage, can hold up at the point of attack against the run, set the edge. I have reservations about Cody Barton being able to do some of those things the way the Seahawks want at that position group. I don't see him being much of a pass rushing presence, and I just don't know that he can hold up against the run. Now, maybe with 2 years in the weight room, he'll be much better at that than he was his rookie season. That's certainly possible, but I'm of the belief that this is Daryl Taylor's job to lose. If he doesn't play well or if he battles injuries, then obviously Cody Barton can win the job. But I think that this is Daryl Taylor's job to lose. I would be surprised if Cody Barton is starting there in week 1. Holly tweets, what players are you most excited to watch during training camp? Well, there's a number that I could mention here. I really want to see what Dwayne Eskridge looks like because he was out for a good chunk of the offseason program dealing with a toe issue. From everything I've been told, he should be good to go when training camp starts. I want to see what this explosive rookie can add to this passing game and even the run game alongside DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So I'm eager to see what he looks like. I want to see Stone Forsythe, their sixth-round pick, actually playing football. OTAs and minicamps, offensive linemen aren't blocking anybody. I want to see what he does against Seattle's veteran defensive linemen, how he holds up in one-on-one. So I'm really excited about those two rookies. On the defensive side of the football, I just mentioned Daryl Taylor. I want to see what he looks like because all we've had to work off of are OTAs and minicamps. He didn't play a single snap last year. I want to see how he looks playing real football at that Sam linebacker spot. And at the cornerback position, Akella Witherspoon is the name that I've got circled because he checks off every box the Seahawks look for at that position. He's long. He's tall. I mean, we're talking a 6'3" corner with really long arms, 33-plus-inch arms. He's a really good athlete. He's improved as a tackler. Just was so inconsistent in San Francisco. And he had some injury issues. If you can keep him healthy, though, this is the perfect system for him to be able to thrive in. And so I want to see what he looks like. And he's going to get tested every day. He's going to be going against Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf, Dwayne Eskridge, Seattle star receivers. So if he's able to turn in a strong training camp going against those guys, that bodes well for his chances of having a potential breakout year this season with the Seahawks. Joshua Kirby tweets, if we get more of the second half of the season offense, who will be blamed the most? And I think a question like that, there's a lot of different factors that are at play. We don't know why they would be struggling. If it's Russell Wilson continuing to have issues getting the football out of his hands and being indecisive, not using the middle of the field, if those things continue to be an issue, then maybe you start to look at the quarterback position and wonder, okay, are we in a situation where this can't get fixed? Have defenses figured him out now 10 years into his career? He's going to be 33. Maybe he's going to start entering the decline phase of his career. Those are questions that might get thrown around. I think it's more likely, though, if we end up in a situation like that, that the coaches are going to be the ones that are going to be taking the blame because you're not going to have a 32, 33-year-old quarterback just suddenly just fall off the map. And that would, you know, I think if the offense continues to struggle the way they did the second half and there aren't adaptations made, you've got to wonder at that point, either Pete Carroll is meddling with the offense and Shane Waldron isn't able to do what he wants to do, or Shane Waldron might be over his head. You got to remember, he has never been a coordinator at a level higher than high school. This is going to be a big challenge for him, regardless of the rave reviews he's gotten up to this point. It's his first NFL coordinator job. I just think there's going to be more pressure on the coaching staff if this is what ends up happening. I don't think this is what happens. They might start kind of slow because you've got a new scheme, but I think that this team has too many weapons, and I think Shane Waldron is going to bring some fresh perspective that should allow this offense. Maybe they won't be quite as dynamic as they were the first half last year, but they should be a top five offense. I think anything less than that would be a monumental disappointment with the talent they've got and the quarterback that's under center leading this offense. Ryan Minson tweets, any word on Aldon Smith? You guys have touched on it in previous episodes, but haven't in probably a week. We actually talked a little bit about this in our final episode last Wednesday because I was under the impression that Aldon Smith's arraignment was scheduled for Wednesday last week, and maybe it has happened. But I've talked to a number of sources and haven't gotten any information on Aldon Smith. There's nothing new that's come out. So at this point, I don't know if he's going to be clear for the start of training camp. I don't know if any charges were levied against him. None of that information has been disclosed publicly. So at this point, everybody's still just waiting on updates in that regard. We don't know if Aldon Smith's going to be available. And if he's not, then the Seahawks then want to turn their attention. Maybe there's a few veteran pass rushers that are still out there that they want to look at. So obviously this is a big deal for the Seahawks. But unfortunately, Ryan, I don't have any information. I don't have any inside scoop that no other reporters have been able to unearth to this point. There just isn't any information that's been made public. We're now a couple weeks from training camp, so I would anticipate that it's going to be coming soon. But as of the recording of this show, haven't heard anything. Last question here real quick from Francisco tweets, what do you think can be realistic expectations for Marquise Blair this season? I think realistic expectations are through the roof for this kid because I've talked about it time and time again. Injuries are the big issue. I think he's your starting slot corner again, as he was last year. I thought he was going to have a breakout second season. He was the best player in training camp last year. Every single day he was creating turnovers and wreaking havoc. And you could just see his teammates, that they were unprompted talking about him in press conferences. I mean, he was the star of camp. And in their mock scrimmages, he was dominant. So I thought this kid might be able to go out and get you 65, 70 tackles, two, three, four interceptions, force some fumbles. He's got a chance to be a game wrecker at that spot, a very unique player at that slot cornerback position. So I'm going to say those are the same types of expectations. He looks healthy to me. He was running well at OTAs and minicamps. Pete Carroll said he wasn't quite 100%, but he's close. He should be ready when training camp opens on the 28th. So I think realistic expectations, I think 50 tackles would be a solid number, maybe 60. And I think that he absolutely can get a handful of interceptions for the Seahawks. He's got better ball skills than advertised. You know he's going to come up and stick people. The key is going to be, can he stay healthy? That has been a problem for him dating back all the way to high school. If they can keep him on the field with Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, though, that's a lot of flexibility that Ken Norton Jr. is going to have as a play caller, a lot of different stuff they can do. And those three players all have slightly different skill sets. That's just going to make this defense a lot of fun to watch. And I still think Ugo Amadi is going to get some reps out there too, because he brings his own skill set to the table as well. So I'm excited about Blair's season. I got to see how he plays in training camp, if he's able to pick up where he left off before the injury, but I'm optimistic that he will. And if he does, that's going to be a big difference maker for this defense in 2021. When I return in the third quarter, continuing our training camp preview series, we've done quarterbacks and cornerbacks to this point. Going to go to the backfield and look at the running back position, Chris Carson and company, heading into training camp. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. It's time to continue our training camp preview series. Up to this point, Rob and I previously have looked at quarterbacks, and we've looked at cornerbacks on the defensive side of the football. With Rob being out of town until tomorrow's show, I figured I'm going to get my cup of tea here and talk about the running back position. And this is a spot that's had a lot of talent for the Seahawks, but there's been a recurring theme the last several seasons. They have not been able to keep their running backs healthy. 2 years ago, Rashad Penny goes down with a torn ACL. Then they lost Chris Carson and CJ Prosise with season-ending injuries a couple weeks later. They went into the playoffs with Marshawn Lynch, who they pulled off the couch, and Travis Homer as their two main running backs. Then last year, Carlos Hyde missed 6 games. Chris Carson missed 4. Penny missed 13, continuing to rehab from his offseason reconstructive knee surgery. DJ Dallas was injured at the end of the year. Travis Homer missed almost half the season. So keeping running backs healthy has been a huge problem for the Seahawks for several years running. And so that leads into my three questions going into camp. The first question, first and foremost, when you're looking at this running back group, can Chris Carson and Rashad Penny stay healthy? Carson, you look at his career track record, rookie season, broken ankle, missed most of the year on injured reserve, only had a little over 200 rushing yards after he won the starting job early in the season as a 7th-round pick. Comes back, has a couple thousand-plus yard seasons, did miss a handful of games in those years, but generally was pretty healthy, did suffer the cracked hip at the end of the 2019 season. Unfortunately, limited his ability to maybe make the first Pro Bowl of his career. And then last year, under 700 rushing yards, but he was effective with his opportunities. He was impacted by injuries and just as much by the fact that the Let Russ Cook movement was going full bore in the first half. He just wasn't getting the football as much as he did in the previous 2 seasons. He averaged 4.8 yards per carry. So we know Chris Carson is still capable of being a top five running back in this league. He also had four receiving touchdowns. He keeps getting better in that aspect of his game. He's just been unable to curb some of these injury issues that have impacted him each and every season. Rashad Penny, on the other hand, we haven't seen production on the field. There have been glimpses. He had a couple really good games before he tore his ACL 2 years ago. But up to that point, he had been a monumental disappointment as a first-round pick. And you can see the talent. The talent is clearly there. You can see the burst. He is the most explosive running back that the Seahawks have on their roster in terms of being able to hit another gear and being able to hit home runs. That long touchdown he had against the Eagles in 2019, you could see it. His ability to just rocket past linebackers, corners, safeties at the second level and be able to hit home runs. The Seahawks don't have any other running backs that can do that. He can run to the outside really well. It just unfortunately has not worked out for Penny or the Seahawks because he just can't stay on the field. And obviously having Chris Carson in front of him has impacted how many carries he's going to get, but he didn't look right when he came back last year, the last three games, and that's to be expected. I mean, ACL injuries are really tough to come back from, especially late in a season like that. He just didn't have the same explosiveness. Hopefully that comes back going into this season, but coming off a knee injury with him being a running back that's already a little bigger back, he's had some issues with being a little heavier than Seahawks one. I mean, there are just a number of issues at play here. If you can keep him healthy and you can keep Chris Carson healthy, this can be one of the best running back tandems in the NFL. Big if is going to be, are they going to be available to do it? And so that's going to be a big key for this group. Can you keep Carson and Penny on the field for most of the season? If you're able to do that, that's going to be a big win for your running game. And I would say for your passing game too. I think both these guys can be a factor in that regard as well. If you could have them both healthy going into the playoffs, that would be a big deal as well. Second big question for me behind those guys, who wins the third down running back job? They've got three players that I expect are going to be in the mix here. And maybe Rashad Penny can be considered for that as well, to give him more snaps. But I think this boils down to Travis Homer, DJ Dallas, Alex Collins, and maybe your undrafted rookie Josh Johnson can be in the mix here too. So really four players that have the ability to be that third down back job. In regard to pass protection, Travis Homer is head and shoulders above everyone else on this roster. That's what makes him so valuable to the Seahawks. Dating back to his time in Miami, he's a fantastic pass protector. He knows how to pick up blitzes. He's not scared to go up and block bigger defensive linemen and linebackers, safeties coming on the blitz. Instincts are through the roof in that regard, and he plays with physicality. So I think that's a big advantage for him. He just hasn't shown much as a runner, and he had injury issues last year. DJ Dallas is a former receiver. You can see that in the way that he runs routes, soft hands, moving him around the formation. He wasn't as good in pass protection as I thought he was going to be last year, but that has generally been a strength for him as well. I think Travis Homer is better, but I think Dallas is capable in that regard. What I wasn't overly impressed with, just the lack of burst running between the tackles compared to the other running backs for Seattle. I just didn't see that in the two games that he started. I don't know that he can be an every down back running between the tackles. I don't know what he's going to give you even as a third down back in that regard. So I think that's something that might be working against him a little bit. I like his running style. I just wish he had a little bit more burst than what he showed last year. And Alex Collins, he's never been a third down back, but at this stage of his career, coming back from not playing at all in 2019, the legal issues that he had, dealing with injuries as well, he played really well in the three games the Seahawks had him off the practice squad last year, ran with more power and tenacity than I saw from him the first time he was in Seattle. He was catching some really nice passes during their OTAs and minicamps. He had a one-handed grab in the end zone, so he's really worked on improving that area. If I see improvements from him in the pass protection department, that was never a strength for him in college at Arkansas or early in his career, but if he's really worked at that, I know that he's put in the work as a receiver. You can just see he's a different player than he was when he came in the league in that regard. If he improves in pass protection, Alex Collins is the dark horse to watch here, especially because you know he can run between the tackles. He's got the advantage in that regard compared to the other two running backs I mentioned. And really the wild card here is Josh Johnson. And really that's going to lead into my third question here. Will a surprise emerge in training camp? The Seahawks kicked the tires on a couple of older running backs. Giovanni Bernard ended up going to the Buccaneers, where the Seahawks reportedly were looking at him. So the Seahawks maybe aren't done. They might add a running back right at the beginning of training camp to the fold, but I think Josh Johnson is the one player that could really surprise here. Alex Collins making the team would not surprise me based on what I saw last year and the improvements I've seen already from him as a receiver. That's why Travis Homer and DJ Dallas, I'm putting you on notice right now. Alex Collins, former fifth-round pick, a guy that almost was a 1,000-yard rusher in Baltimore, is a really good player, and he's got fresh legs. Not a lot of carries the last couple of seasons. So I wouldn't consider him a surprise. Josh Johnson would be the surprise here just because he's an undrafted rookie. But talking about a player that's around 215 pounds, had over 1,200 rushing yards at Louisiana Monroe 2 years ago, double-digit touchdowns. He's capable of breaking tackles, running with power. He's got better burst than advertised or his pro day running would indicate. So he's a better athlete than that. Not a lot of catches in college, but he made some nice catches out in the field in June. It looked like he was comfortable in that capacity. And I like pass protection film that I've seen from him as well. So he is a player to keep an eye on. If he has a strong training camp and preseason and your veterans don't step up, he could absolutely be that next undrafted player that crashes the party and wins the roster spot in week one. And maybe somebody like Homer, Dallas, or Collins ends up being a player that's expendable so that Johnson can be kept on the team. If they're worried they can't get into the practice squad, that may be the decision that they make here. My bold prediction for the running back group, and I'm saying this, I'm making the prediction that Chris Carson and Rashad Penny are going to be able to stay healthy, which, of course, I mentioned a few moments ago. That's a big if. These guys have both got lengthy injury histories, but I'm banking on those two players in a system that is going to work well for them. A lot more wide zone. Chris Carson can run that. I think Rashad Penny could be a major beneficiary of that, given his running style. I've got Carson and Penny rushing for over 1,750 yards and scoring a combined 14 offensive touchdowns. So that can include receiving touchdowns as well, just to make sure that that's understood. These are not rushing touchdowns, 14 combined offensive touchdowns. So that could be maybe Chris Carson running for 1,100, Rashad Penny rushing for 650, some type of a combination like that. But I'm banking on both players being able to stay healthy and being 1A and 1B for Seattle's running attack. Maybe it's 1 and 2 with Chris Carson getting 55% of the reps, Rashad Penny coming in second. But I'm anticipating if they both stay healthy, they're both going to get plenty of opportunities. We just haven't seen these two guys be on the field together. Aside from a trio of games late last season, it's been a long time since Carson and Penny were both healthy at the same time. The Seahawks should be cautiously optimistic that both players can return to their top of their game, providing far greater balance than they've had looking back at last season. Carson's going to be your bell cow. He's going to be the battering ram. Penny's going to have that extra gear. He's going to be that home run threat. As long as he can stay healthy, anytime he catches the ball, he could end up going the distance and getting you 6 points. I believe Shane Waldron's scheme, again, more wide zone concepts, more under center formations. I think that is a good fit for Rashad Penny to really break out. Even if it's as a reserve player, he's just got to be able to stay on the field. That's going to be the big question mark here. If they can keep Carson and Penny healthy, avoid lengthy absences with injuries, this run game has a chance to really bounce back. Those two could give the Seahawks a nasty 1-2 punch to go with Russell Wilson, all the weapons they have on the outside. To me, that would be the perfect scenario for this offense. You want to let Russell Wilson cook, but at the same time, for him to really cook a masterpiece, he's got to have that running game that can set the table. That's going to fall on Chris Carson and Rashad Penny being healthy and being able to play at their best. I'm cautiously optimistic the two of them are going to be able to do that during this 2021 season. Make sure to check out the Locked On Today podcast hosted by Peter Bukowski. He updates you on the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast in the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. Check out Locked On Seahawks on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all-new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY. Coming up on our Tuesday show, I'll be rejoined by Rob Rang. And with the Seattle Kraken set to pick 30 players in an expansion draft on Wednesday, Rob and I are going to explore if the NFL had an expansion draft coming up and a new team was entering the league, Which players would the Seahawks protect? Really interesting hypothetical the two of us are going to be exploring on tomorrow's episode. You won't want to miss it. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.